Good afternoon. Thank you for being here. I'm going to talk to you about a student faculty community engaged research project that was conducted in South Africa. I have no disclosures. And so the name of this project was called Building Global Bridges, and it took place in Durban, South Africa. And VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University, where I'm at, we have a partnership with the University of KwaZulu-Natal. And so it's within this context that this project took place. And I'd like to acknowledge part of the team, the youth at Kenneth Gardens, the community that we worked in, and the VCU students. I mean, obviously, as we all know, doing this kind of work, it takes an entire team to conduct this research successfully. And oftentimes, it's one person giving a presentation, but it's not reflective of the reality on the ground. So I'm going to try and stick. I'm going to do a little test on myself and see if I can stick to 1 minute per slide. Here we go. So I define this as a community engaged research project because I don't think it meets my definition of what a CPBR project is, but you'll see that there were many elements of community engagement. And the project started because when I visited the University of KwaZulu-Natal, I met with Monique Marks, a professor there, and she talked to me about this housing project in Durban, Kenneth Gardens, and the need that they had for research. And as these meetings occur, you say, great idea, I'd like to work with you, but you don't have any funding at that time, right? And if you're lucky, later down the road, some funding occurs. And this is what happened in this project. So we received internal funding from VCU, and I wrote the grant with Monique. And the idea was that we would build these global bridges by providing six graduate students at VCU the opportunity to go to South Africa and partner with six graduate students at the University of KwaZulu-Natal to conduct a community engaged research project. And the research would be what UKZN had articulated to me their needs were when I met with them maybe a year ago. So it was community engaged on various levels. And I think this is consistent with a lot of universities now that focuses on internationalization and really educating their students for the future and for operating within a global context. I think that was over a minute, right? But who's counting? All right. So I thought, as I was in the project, what I thought was very interesting was I felt that there were these kind of a triangle of partnerships. There was the VCU-UKZN partnership, the investigators. There were the UKZN-VCU graduate students who were partners in a way. And then there were the university graduate students that partnered with the young people at Kenneth Gardens. So I thought that was very interesting, all these multiple levels of partnerships within this project. I'm not going to talk about the actual research today because I want to talk about the process of community engagement and some of the challenges, but I did want to provide you with a context. So what these students were expected to do within a month, from July 19th to August 16th, which is technically less than a month, was they were supposed to do a photo voice project. And they engaged 15 young people in this housing community to do the photo voice project. And they were also to conduct semi-structured interviews with elders at Kenneth Gardens to talk to them about their use of the clinic and their experience about health issues living in Kenneth Gardens. So that was the agenda, the community engaged research agenda. The recruitment and selection of students, I think it's the same, the recruitment and selection of the people who will conduct your community engaged research is a critical, I think, element within community engaged or CPBR research that I don't think we spend enough time thinking about, and we don't have any real formal processes to figure that out. Be that as it may, at VCU we had an application process because the entire trip was paid for. To go on this community engaged research project. They did not necessarily have had experience conducting community engaged research, but they did have to have a desire to learn more about community engagement. They had to have an interest in health disparities, and they had to have previous work experience working with low-income, kind of marginalized communities. And this was part of the team. So we completed successfully what we set out to do. So I just want to give you an idea of the whirlwind kind of 1 month experience that we all had. And my next slide will talk more about kind of what the challenges were that emerged from this experience. But when we arrived there, we held community meetings within Kenneth Gardens to let people know what we were going to be doing. And obviously, I don't think I made this point earlier, it's not as if we walked into an entirely new situation. There was already community engagement on the ground. So it was not we were not just arriving on the doorstep of the community. There's been a lot of work done before, and the community was expecting us. We completed the Photo Voice project. We completed the semi-structured interviews. We conducted data analysis and data dissemination with the youth and with the community. So within a month, we completed all the research components. Right now, we're working on a photo voice book from this experience. We're also working on video diaries, and students are writing papers on the data collected from the project. So the month was over and we left. But here's what we learned. So some of the challenges for those of us who do community-engaged research, international research, is the big question of the IRB. I think we can all, kind of, those of us who do this work, can share experiences of some of those challenges. But I think when you conduct international research in this particular student community context, the big question is who should be the IRB of record, right? In the US, the expectation is that your institution will be the IRB of record, because there's just that expectation. But with that comes a whole host of challenges, both for the institution where you're conducting the research and for yourself when you're in the field doing the work. So one of the questions that came up when we were in the field was that we needed to make changes, but we didn't have approval for those changes, and all of those who have done, you know, our sworn testimony and all of that know how things operate, and we know that we cannot do anything in the field that we do not have approval for. So that was a real challenge for us to then work with our IRB back in the U.S. and get the approval before we could then go to the next step. But those were some of the things that we had to do. And frankly, the South African partners were a bit baffled by some of those requirements. The students couldn't really understand why that was needed. And the United States students couldn't understand why the other students didn't think that that was a major, major problem. And I think some of the U.S. students had grave concerns about the more flexible, maybe, approach that the international partner have. Moving along with the whole question of ethics, is that we know in the U.S. we have much more detailed consenting procedures and expectations. And I don't know about your institution, but I know at mine, our consent form is maybe 4 pages long. And that's a pretty short consent form. And then if you're thinking about issues related to translation, and you're thinking about that relational context within which you want to establish informed consent in another country, it can be very challenging. And then the South African partners made a big, for them it was a big issue, and having done research in South Africa and being from South Africa originally as well, I understand that there's some concerns about these long documents, and for South Africans that's not necessarily a comfort. Whereas in the US it might be perceived that the longer the document is, though I don't think that's even true, not with the groups that I work with. So I will cancel what I was trying to say. And I think the issue of relationship is so important, and I think in this community-engaged research experience, the U.S. students, I think their eyes were opened, and maybe some of them knew this going in, but I think they learn the extent to which relationships really matter when you conduct research in communities. And I think here's the other issue. Oh, 5 minutes. I have 5 minutes left, apparently. So, okay. I no matter what I do, I tell you, I can't figure this thing out about timing myself. So here's some other challenges. Preparation time. I think the other issue is the whole insider-outsider dynamic about how when you're from the U.S. in particular, you're being perceived in a country such as Africa or in South Africa. So that's a big issue. I think that institutions have varying resources, and sometimes you must have a discussion about these different resources that you bring to the table, similar as to what you would do in any CPBR type of research. I think one of the other challenges that the students had was learning to work through differences. I think when you live in a more collectivist society, where you live more interdependent with each other, it requires you to be in a different way, to live your life in a different way. And if you're coming from the U.S. or from a different culture, that is something that you have to adjust to in many, many different ways. But I think what we also found was that there were many similarities that students shared. I think the U.S. students were very surprised to find the extent to which popular culture, U.S. popular culture was prevalent in South Africa. And in fact, students in South Africa would share songs that they knew from U.S. artists that the U.S. students didn't know themselves. I am going to go through this very quickly. I think the other thing that you learn too when you do international research is the importance of flexibility. Even when you do community engaged research, that you have to be flexible and you have to go with the flow to some extent and to figure out collectively where kind of the boundaries are of going to with the flow. And I think that was quite an experience for the students on both sides to learn. I think humility too. I think the other thing is in the U.S. culturally, it is appreciated when you can express how much you know. And if you can be the first to say how much you know. Whereas, for example, what the students realized in the South African culture, at least for that group that we were in, that it wasn't that important to be the first one. It wasn't that important to say the most. But that didn't mean that you did not know. And so I think there was really those building bridges in terms of just understanding how people express themselves in the world. All right, I think a recommendation, international global research projects need to be linked into establish an existing community engagement project, and they have to address a local need, definitely. 2 minutes. I think the knowledge transfer and expertise must be a two-way dialogue, and maybe in the question and answer section, we can talk about what that actually means in practice. Because I think we all say that, but what does that actually look like? We need lots of time for planning ahead of time. There needs to be fair contribution of both parties, not equal contribution, but fair contribution. And I think being adaptive and sensitive to local needs as well. And then I thought, you know, my title was I'm fitting a square peg into a round hole, and I think. These are some of the challenges for community engaged research, whether you do it internationally or whether you do it in a local community. Administrative requirements can translate into administrative constraints of actually doing the work. I think the IRB is a big issue. I think social capital, maybe I'll just end there. I think the social capital of the researchers coming into the context, especially internationally, is something that really needs to be examined critically and addressed. Because I think when you're from the U.S., you're being perceived as having a level of social capital that the UKZN students were not perceived to have. And how did that manifest and translate in terms of the data that they were able to collect, for example? Thank you. I'm out of time. Thanks for your attention.